I'm not a regular author, if you like, and I'm not a regular attendant at literary festivals. But Listowel is a name to be conjured with in the literary world. I was very, very pleased when I was invited to come along and talk about my book. I think it's something which I have been asked to do on several occasions now, and I've just spent a couple of weeks touring the United States with it. So literary festivals are not a regular occurrence in my life. Slightly intimidating, I must say, particularly with somebody as well known and highly respected as Colm is. But anyway, I'm very much looking forward to it at the end of next week.
Yeah, it should be great. And look, tell me, how has that tour gone? How has your book been received?
It was a book which I never intended to write in the first place, and it came about largely because I realized that there were so many myths and exaggerations and lies even, which were told, written about poor old Oscar Wilde after his death, that I decided about 20 years ago that I really needed to explode them all. And it meant an awful lot of research on my part, and it's taken a hell of a time to get the thing published. But I knew that if I'd accused everyone else, or to say everyone else, many other researchers, many other biographers, of inaccuracies, and that inaccuracies is probably the gentlest way of putting it, I
Yeah.
had to play by my own rules. So it was, in a sense, an academic book, but I knew at the same time that I had to make it readable to the general public. So it's been a very delicate balancing act between producing something which is correct and properly researched, but also has been, I'm very happy to say, described by several reviewers as really quite a page turner. And that was a very gratifying thing to hear, because it's exactly what I wanted to achieve. Something in a sense for the serious sort of academic world, but at the same time, much more for a general intelligent reading public.
Yeah,
So it's
you
been
want to
well
make it
received, and
a
I'm
com
very happy that I've achieved what I set out to do, I think.
Yeah, you wanted to make it a compelling story, as well as righting the wrongs of, as you said, the myths and the lies and the conjecture about what happened to him and what happened in his life and his relationship with his wife and with his family.
Yes, I mean, I think it's very much the initial part of the book is about Oscar coming out of prison, and the effect on him of the hypocrisy of the English expatriate community in Europe at the time, where his wife had gone in exile with her two children, my father and my uncle. And I think that was the start of the whole myth busting. People have just said, oh, well, poor old Constance, she left it too long. She listened to her advisors and hesitated, and then Alfred Douglas got his claws, so to speak, back into Oscar, and that was, the second half of the tragedy. But it was nothing of the sort. She didn't hesitate. She was longing to go and see him. And she listened to her advisors, who advised her to give him time, a sort of period of probation. And it wasn't really that at all. It was that they just couldn't face the idea of having to accept this man, this convict, bankrupt, and homosexual. I mean, any one of which would have put him beyond the pale in those times.
In those days, yeah.
Back into their society. So that was the start of the busting of the myths. And then it just goes on right through the teens of the 20th century, and the 20s and the 30s. It's a whole catalogue of misrepresentations and lies
Yeah.
and fabrications and so on.
It's one of the most harmful mistruths of that time, the idea that Oscar didn't care or was indifferent to the passing of Constance when she died.
Well, I think that's something which I've tried to address in the book, which is that the only person who said that Oscar didn't really care about the death of his wife was Robert Ross. Now, Robert Ross was supposedly, and I think it's probably true, Oscar's first homosexual lover. And I think the fact that that Oscar cared about his wife wasn't entirely to Robbie's liking. I mean, you know, he was therefore the rival, in a sense, for Oscar's affections. And if you look at the correspondence which Oscar had with his other friends at that time, he is absolutely devastated by the death of his wife, and even goes to visit her grave in Genoa a year or so later. And there's a very moving letter that he writes to Robert Ross, indeed, at that time, saying, I saw her grave. Of my name, of course, no mention. And it gave me a sense of the uselessness of all regrets. I mean, that's not the explanation of going to see his wife's grave of a man who doesn't care about his wife at all. I think that indeed is another myth. He cared very deeply about Constance, and Constance cared very deeply about him. Indeed, shortly before she dies, and she dies before he does, only just under a year after he comes out of prison and he survives her. And she writes to a friend and says, if I saw him now, I think I should forgive everything. When I love someone once, I love them always. You know, there was a great deal of affection, of love between these two people. And the myth that Oscar didn't care about his wife after he came out of prison, that Constance didn't really care about him. Of course, she was angry when he went back to Alfred Douglas, but she got over it. And he was extremely regretful about his behavior. I've tried to bring that out in the book, and I hope that from now onwards, people are going to stop saying he didn't care about her and she didn't care about him.
It's part of the difficulty in telling the story and having to right all these wrongs because of, I suppose, a combination of things. He's so famous today, his works are studied so much, he's idealized by many people for his genius and his ability, but the drama of his life at the time as well, and the effect that had on British society, and as you said, the hypocrisy that surrounded the scandal, shall we say, from people in British society.
Yes, I mean, I think one of the problems is that when you say Oscar has been idealized, people like always to take his part against other people. I mean, in the long letter that he wrote from prison, De Profundis, to Alfred Douglas, he accuses Douglas of all sorts of things, and not all of them, I think, probably truth. People want to, as you say, to idealize him. And if I'm going to say, well, actually, he's human flesh and blood, he's a three-dimensional person, he's a man with all his faults, like most of us. So he isn't by any means perfect. And to show him, to portray him as being human blood, human, full of human faults, flesh and blood, is perhaps not to the liking of everybody. I think you're absolutely right. There's been far too much idealizing of Oscar. He's much more, one has far more empathy with him, I think, as a real human being, faults and all. And that's what I've tried to portray at the beginning of the book.
Just on that point for your family, you talk as well about your father and your uncle and the difficulties of their lives following the death of Constance, and because they were who they were, Oscar Wilde's children, they were treated very, very harshly indeed when they were raised by their benefactor and had a lifelong effect on them.
That I think is something which my father brought out in his book in 1954 when he wrote. He by that stage he was what 70, 70, oh, near enough. No, coming up 68. That's right. He was nearly 70 when he wrote his first autobiographical book. And it was a time when the vogue for miserable childhood memoirs hadn't yet started. So he had to be very selective about what he said about his childhood. I mean, it's a very poignant book, and the way he describes his childhood has moved and did move at the time a lot of people. But it really was only half the truth. And I've discovered in the correspondence that he had with his brother that it was far, far worse than what he depicted at that time. There was, I was renewing the copyright in that book in America in or sometime in the 1980s. And I made a mistake in the renewal notice, and somebody rang me from the Library of Congress and corrected my mistake because I was otherwise going to be out of time. And I sent her a copy of the book. And she wrote back to me a months later saying I was terribly moved since I was in the same position. I was orphaned at an early stage. And there's one phrase in that book, and this is relevant to what we're saying. My father writing, "The terrible realization that there was nobody for whom I was the most important person in the world." Can you imagine a child having to think like that? Well, and when I read that, I read it with new ears for the first time about 30 or 40 years after he'd written it, and I'd never noticed it before. But behind that book, there's an awful lot of pain. And I think that the pain of having to live with Oscar Wilde as a father in the background, both for him and my uncle Cyril, was far, far greater than anything which has been depicted so far. And that's what I've tried to bring out.
Indeed. Well, look, it's going to be a great afternoon and evening in the store. You'll be talking about all of that and more, I'd imagine. A final question for you, Merlin. Your book, your work, and you've put a lot of work of your life into this and your family records. Are you happy that they're going in the right direction in terms of, like you said, bringing out the real Oscar Wilde and the impact his life had, the real human being behind the idol for many people?
Well, I think it's I am happy in the sense that there's been so much follow my leader, what I call follow my leader biography, people saying one thing and being picked up by another person, the facts not being checked. It's not a happy story by any means. And I think the subtitle, The Legacy of a Scandal, says it all. I was reluctant, I think, at the beginning to embark on it simply because I didn't want people to have a sense of me saying, "Oh, poor me." It's not poor me at all. It's I'm just a, as I think I've said somewhere, I'm just a footnote in the story, and I think I stand back from it. I'm very moved by it. I hope other people will be moved by it, and I think it's opening a whole new window on the Wilde story and the posthumous Wilde story, which I hope people will, I say enjoy is too much, but I hope they'll respect it and appreciate it. And the fact that, you know, this tragedy which happened now, what is it, nearly 130 years ago, has had such echoes right down the ages, even till today. And it's a sort of, well, I've always said it's a sort of permanent rebuke to Victorian morality. And I hope people will see it as that.
Okay, well, Merlin, listen, thanks for giving us your time today. We look forward to seeing you in the stall, and thanks for talking to me in the program.
Not at all. It's been a great pleasure. Look forward to being in Listowel.